Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome, welcome to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host. The title of the broadcast is Creditors. We'll be dealing with the following questions. What are bonds? What are the bonds are we talking about? Do we use these bonds to buy things? What is it that fund these bonds? As usual, before we get started, we're going to get on down in here in these commercials. And we're ready to go. Keep in mind, the number to dial into the broadcast is 515-605-9755. It'll be opened up later on. Get down to the bottom of this creditors and our bonds. And we'll be coming back next week with another podcast, and we'll be dealing with more some secure parting creditors, so we know exactly what that is. And hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
Credit card debt, student loan debt, lawsuits, child support, mortgages, foreclosure, secured party and creditor. Get my free report. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. What kind of trust do you set up? How do you use a trust? What do you put in a trust? For the solution, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. Get my free report by going to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Driver's license, freedom to travel. Who exactly needs the driver's license? What did the U.S. Supreme Court rule about it over and over again? How does that work? What is proper syntax grammar? Get my free report. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the little contact form. Put your email address in there. That'll come straight to me, and I'll rush it directly to your email. TahakaDebtElimination.org. Hello, everybody. I want to introduce you to The Great Debate by Dr. Walter Williams. He single-handedly laid out the facts in this powerful debate against Mr. Munir Muhammad of the Nation of Islam, Chester Blair, a prominent lawyer in Chicago, Illinois, and Reverend Henry Hardy, a prominent minister in Chicago, and Prince Aziel ben Israel of the Hebrew Israelites. This debate was hosted by a retired policeman named W.L. Lillard. Now, the whole thing was a setup by Lillard and his gang, but it didn't work. They brought what they believed to the table, but Dr. Walter Williams brought what he knew for a fact and what he could prove and laid it on the table. We are now in the age of knowing. The age of walking around believing in stuff is over. For your copy of The Great Debate, go to TahakaDataElimination.org. That's TahakaDataElimination.org, or contact me by phone. My number's on the website. Oh, and by the way, the lawyer got bust up too. The Great Debate, get your copy today. Good day and peace.
Our commercials and stuff, so you know how to get a hold of this information. However, Williams will be coming back on with us. Got a little broadcast, we'll be ready to go. Hopefully, before the month is out. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be converting. Sure to be up on YouTube, and all you have to do is look at the face of the video and write down in the bottom right, subscribe, so that you would know whenever we have posted something and you'll be able to get in there and see it. Important credit and authorizations, bond for discharge, appearance bond, surety bond, case bond, performance bond. One of the first things that we got to understand is the rules and regulations. The fiction and real cannot mix. We can't mix public and private. I've said that over and over and over. Honor. We must stay in honor at all costs, at all times. There is no money in America. We have debt notes. The real money is silver and gold. And of course, they made it against the law in 1933 for us to use that as a medium of exchange. So we have debt notes. Do not participate in public plays. It all has to do with trust. Okay? Now, let's get on down in the meat and potatoes of the thing. I'm not going to deal with all the rules and regulations. These documents are right there in your our secure party creditor package. You get access to this information with the whole thing on it. All right. Bond. In every case, a bond represents debt. Its holder is a creditor of the corporation and not a part owner, as in the ship. More broadly, to refer also to unsecured debt instruments. Black's Law 6th edition. So if you got Black's Law 6th edition, you can follow us in there with the definition of the terminology that we'll be using. Party and creditor package, you get the entire set of Black's Law Dictionary, Volume 1 through 9, okay? This bond, bond supporting credit authorization, this bond is the debt side, the implied contract, all their gold to the Federal Reserve banks by May 1st, 1933. A bond is always evidence the liability to the debt, the debtor on asset to the creditor. Now, I'm always talking about creditors and their bonds, but pay close attention here. This bond is also the implied debt that results when you apply for a birth certificate for new entitlements, straw man. You requested that the state create, when you had your babies, you put a description of the baby on the application. This tied the baby and described baby man lives, or a girl. When the man dies, the straw man is terminated by the state with a death certificate. It has no commercial interest. Understood. Straw man, a front, a third party who is put up in name only to take part in a transaction, nominal party to the transaction, who acts as an agent for another window for the purposes of taking titles to real property and executing whatever documents and instruments the principal, John Doe, may direct respecting the property. Person, John, who purchases property for another, John, to conceal identity of a real purchaser, or to accomplish something that is otherwise not public with private. Implied partnership. One which is not a real partnership, but because of the conduct of the parties. The defendant trusts you as trustees, as the is stopped from that is a dishonor. You follow me? This bond is also the debt that results when you apply for a title to a car, a mortgage, or any other loan that resulted in collateral being registered with not be required to pledge. The UD through his bankruptcy status. Now, we're going to stop right there. We'll be back with a little bit more of this right here. But we're going to go down and see if I can break this down a little bit more for you so that you can clearly get the gist of what we're talking about. We're talking about a private and public. We're talking about a man versus the real man and so on and so forth. Okay? Another part, and we're going to allow them to share as soon as we come from this commercial break. Okay? So y'all hold on a minute.
What a fantastic way to live. Hello, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay. Operating in the private as a secured party and creditor instead of living the life of a debtor. Now, to learn how to do that, you have to get the knowledge. There's no doubt about it. You don't mix public with private, just like oil and water don't mix. For the skill and know-how, go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Contact me, Tahaka. My number is on the website. Or send me an email. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Learn how to live the good life as a secured party and a creditor instead of a debtor. And eliminate your debts. Fun time is almost over. TahakaDebtElimination.org. Peace.
Okay, we're back. Keep in mind, we're going to see what a few of these folks have to say about this stuff before we go back into the documentation that we just done. Keep in mind, the number to dial into the broadcast is 515-605-9757, and we will be opening up the phone lines later on in the broadcast. Press 1 on your phone. That'll give me an indication that you got something to say. If you have any questions now, and we can deal with that. But y'all hold your hat. We're going to deal with this here, these bonds. So hold on a minute.
What's up, guys? It's your boy, The Wolf. Hopefully the audio is okay. I know some people were complaining that they, you know, it's a little dark. Not just me. Oh, just kidding. But that the volume or audio was a little on the low side, so I turned the decibels up. So hopefully it's coming in better. I tried to listen to it. It sounded better, but a little garbly, so I apologize. Just trying to help out people who might be a little hearing impaired out there. So this particular video is about cashing in your bonds. Okay, people keep asking me, how do I do it? How do I do it? And I'm like, go to the website. But apparently they want to see me do a video on how to make sure that they can get some money. Okay, now the other videos, if you haven't seen them, you're talking about, you know, death of somebody who's had a bond, like mom, dad, you know, uncle, cousin, best friend, chick down the street who he has to mess around with, grandma, grandpa, great-grandpappy, great-granddaddy, or whoever. I made those videos, so go back to YouTube, James C. Lovett, go to that, the main site for us, and search through the videos. And as always, guys, if you guys want to see more videos, go there, because there's lots of them that you haven't seen. I have certain folders that have different videos in them that you're not always going to see in, say, the United States America folder or whatever else playlist that you guys see. So there's other videos. You just got to go there because YouTube will not show you all of them. They don't want to promote me because I make my videos less than 15 minutes. That's why a lot of people just blah, blah, blah for the first part of the video. Anyway, I'm blah, blah, blah now, so let's get to it. Okay, how do we get your money? Go. All right, so on this page it talks about when can I cash in my EE bonds my E-bonds, what are they worth? Do I have to authorize my attorney in fact? Remember, anybody can be an attorney in fact. Don't call yourself an attorney, which just means a turn means to turn over, which all that is, they're turning over papers. So they really don't own the word, but they like to claim it, so stay away from that. But you can use attorney in fact when you know what you're doing. And I'm not going to be your attorney in fact, all right? How much can I cash in at one time? What will I need a cash paper bond for? What form do I need for taxes, et cetera? Okay. When can I cash in my EE bonds or E-bonds? Okay. If you cash an EE bond before it is 5 years old, you will lose the last 3 months of interest. EE bonds earn interest for up to 30 years if you do not cash the bonds in before maturity. So the longer you hold the bonds, up to 30 years, the more it's going to be worth. If you've been affected by a disaster, special provisions may apply. All E-bonds and some EE bonds have stopped earning interest and should be cashed. So if those people who are of the wolf age, you know, 27, 30 plus at least, you probably fall into your bonds, your, you know, social security numbers, EE, CUSIP numbers on the back, wedding certificates, you know, things of that nature, paper bonds and whatever else. You're probably about time to be cashed out, okay? So obviously they're saying right now, so 30, yeah, so if you're 30 years old or older, you probably have an EE bond, which is why somebody's like, I can't find mine. Well, you have to adjust that same number, use that CUSIP number in the converter, find the trading number, and then you put that in, but you might have to use that same number on I, E, EE, HH, and whatever else they have in there, because depending on when you were born, those letters indicate the year that you were born. So you might have to play around with them a little bit. Okay? They do make it as complicated damn near as possible. And when they mature, they're not going to find you, even though they're supposed to under executive order. But, oops, can't, don't know where you went, you moved, you grew up, you're no longer at your house that you were at 30 years ago when you were a kid or when you got married. Well, some of y'all might still be in your mom's basement. For shame. But anyway, not knocking it, get your hustle on, do what you got to do. But get out sometime soon. I'm tired of seeing these videos of bros and whoever else, chicks living in a basement on one mattress, and dudes bringing girls down to their mom's basement. That was so last year for me. I don't do that anymore. I'm just kidding. All right. So, how do I authorize an attorney in fact to cash my bonds? Now, you remember, you guys don't need this. You can actually take the paper bonds right to your bank, and they will cash them for you. But for instructions, you're going to use FS Publication 0105. All right, how much can I cash in at one time? You can cash in a minimum of $25 and any amount above that in one penny increments. So, I know one lady reached out to me. I'm not going to mention her name. Hopefully she's going to take me on a dinner date or something with all the money that she's going to be getting after I helped her discover this stuff. But about $300K. Okay, she did her work, she's got everything on the way. She'll probably check mine out again at some point in time. I don't know, I'm just so busy reading books and doing all stuff. People are like, oh my God, if you've got money sitting there, oh, sure, no, let's take a break. So you're going to talk about me not cashing in mine, but you guys haven't cashed in yours yet because you're still learning? At least I know how to do it. So, nah, the trash heap has spoken. Sorry, up early. All right, so paper bonds, there's generally no limit to the total value you may cash in a single transaction. However, banks may vary in their own policies on how much cash you can do in one transaction. Banks also may have a policy to not cash a savings bond at all. Okay, so what will I need to cash in a paper bond? Okay, once again, you can visit your bank. Typically, they won't cash in anything at the bank less than $1,000. I'm not even going to go into all that. To cash it in through the Treasury, you need to complete form 1522, download it or order it. To mail it in, you got to mail it into their Treasury Retail Security Services, P.O. Box 214, Minneapolis, Minnesota 55480. Regardless of your cash cash of your bonds. If you aren't listed as the owner or co-owner on a bond, you have to submit a legal evidence or other documentation to show that you're entitled to it. We don't return legal evidence. Okay, so keep that in mind, guys. Savings bonds cannot be transferred if you find a bond that belongs to someone else or buy a bond online on an auction site. You cannot cash it. If you inherit a bond through a death of the bond owner, then once again, go back to the video I made or click here where it says death of a savings bond owner. Okay, we talked about all that. Will I get forms for my taxes? Yes, IRS form 1099 INT, okay, which means it's an interest bearing and you are getting money in, okay, because typically you're being paid, rather. You're being paid. So your 1099s, those people don't know, I've made these videos on them. You've got your 1099A, 1099B, 1099Cs, and I'm not going to go through all that now, but let's just say if you are making payments to something, let's just say car, house, or whatever, anywhere you're paying somebody money, you can 1099 them, whether it's a 1099A or 1099C, which I believe, if I remember correctly, the C is if you own the account and you're closing it, I believe. So just look them up or go back to the videos to get that information. But yeah, so if you're being, but because they're paying you money, they're going to 1099 you. Okay, so you have to pay the taxes on the money, which is why if you're making payments to somebody, they have to pay those taxes, and you are entitled to some of that money back because you paid. You're the financier. You are a secured party or a creditor. Can I find out if an EE or E bond has already been cashed out or replaced? Start with your local financial institution. Okay, now this is the part I didn't know. It may be able to tell if you have a bond, if the bond is eligible for redemption. If the bank can't help you, you may contact them. If you are the owner or co-owner, send a signed request to the address below. Be sure to include the serial number of the bond. So for those people who have the numbers, but you're not sure, you can't find it, write them.
Ding.
Knowing is half the battle. All right. If the owner of the bond or both co-owners have died, you must provide such proof of copy of death certificate of the deceased person. So if somebody you know who has died, like I said in the other video, you can send in a copy or a certificate of death for each person who is deceased to see if they've had these securities or what they have associated with their names and their accounts. You guys are leaving all this money on the table. Who else is teaching you guys this but the wolf? I'm sure there's, like the rest of my videos, you're going to see a lot more people copying it, which is okay, I guess, too. At least just send me a shout-out to James C. Lovett Channel, a.k.a. The Bad Wolf. That's all I'm asking. And for those people who are using my information out there, fellow wolves, if you see somebody using this information inappropriately, report them, because they're all just unauthorized. They're promoting hate information.
Okay, we'll get back here, buddy. We're back. Now, we can access those videos right there on YouTube. And I just want to bring him in to shed a little light on this bond thing. But we're going to get back over here because we're still dealing with the definition. Let's deal with pledge. Pledge is a bailment. Bailment, a delivery of goods and personal property by one person, which is the straw man, to another. Bailee, state, or UUD, in trust for the execution of a special object exemption, in brackets, upon or in relation to such goods. If you do not volunteer, you may be given choices to make it easier for you to volunteer, but you must always do this voluntarily. You are not asked to give your substance, only to pledge it while you keep possession of the substance in return. You get implied bond. The straw man receives a social security outside number is the exemption identifier number. Same digits, just no dash. All right. debt number 123-45, help the agent of the U.S. or state. Property exemption number 123456789. No of the debt to corporation. So it is presumed to be an officer. Our tax returns that must follow all the corporate rules and regulations, which is public laws. The man, on the other hand, is not a creation of the debt of corporation, but is a presumed representative of the straw man. The man is also the one who had the credit owes. This is a national debt, at least part of it, to the people who pledged their substance in return for an exemption from paying public debt. The U.S. Everything is backed by the full credit of the people. We have to have faith the U.S. will honor its debts, and we have to know how to use our credit. The straw man cannot use your credit on its own, but it can use it if you authorize it, or our authorization is backed by implied contract and the resulting bond debt the U.S. has to the people. As long as the people are not acting like debtors and victims, they can use their credit. When the people start acting like debtors, straw man, they dishonor their own heritage and rights. Okay? Y'all got that? All right. Are backed by the bond. The number on the bond is 123456789 for John Doe. Okay, you see, without the dashes. All right, now we're going to get down in this a little bit further, but right now we're going to move forward, and then I'll be back with some more clarity on this stuff, because I'm trying to make this as clear as I possibly can. Okay? Just hold on. Keep in mind that we got a lot of rain coming this way, so we're having some little thunder and lightning. So y'all bear with us. We're just hoping that we don't get knocked off the air. But anyway, here we go again.
What's going on, everyone? Let's fix this here. This is Coach MT back with some more great, incredible value today. So let me slide this over here, or maybe here, I'm not sure. But today we're going to be talking about how to e-file your 1099A, okay? This is very, very, very exciting, but you have to also make sure that you are detailed in this process, okay? Now, I know there's a lot of people out here who are, you know, attempting to get their hands on the 1099A form, right? And, you know, they're scarce. They're like trying to find the Yeti, right? No one has found the Yeti, but we know it's out there, okay? But today I'm going to be going over e-file, okay? Now, again, because I get a lot of questions on coach this, that, I heard this, I saw this, I read this, all right? This is just one of the ways. One, okay, if you want to, go continue to do research on how to file online, okay? My job here is just to open you up to the process to let you know that this is possible, okay? This is for educational and informational purposes only, but I'm just letting you know what you have access to. If you want to get better at this, continue to read, continue to study, right? Get the books, Meet Your Straw Man, and where's my other book? Meet Your Straw Man, I don't have that here, the UCC Connection. Where are my books? Oh, well. All right. Meet Your Straw Man, the UCC Connection. All right. Continue to learn. There are other people out here who are doing this process as well, too. Okay. So what you want to do is create an account on what we call 1099online.com. And I'm going to go over two processes here. Okay. Two processes. So 1099online. So I'm here inside of my account. You want to click on dashboard, and click on dashboard, and you want to go here to file new form. All right. Tax year 2021, select form 1099A. You want to hit next. Okay. Now, here's where you start to put in the information. So if you are looking to, first I'm going to do if you're looking to pay for something, right? You want to buy a house, you want to buy a car, you're paying for services, all right? You're paying for services. Then this is what you'll want to do. So you'll go to U.S. Treasury, okay? But you'll click add. You're going to want to add this first. So you're going to click add, and let me move the little camera here. You want to select business, and then you put the information in. You put the U.S. Treasury TIN number, which is 52-090-7065, 52-090-7065, business name. You want to type it like this, all right? United States Treasury, okay? Then you put the address in, city, state, zip, and, you know, you can put phone if you want. You can put your own phone number. I don't know what the, or you just look it up, okay? We're going to do cancel, so you can see right here. All right, I actually found the phone number. All right, so you see I put all this information in right here, and then it adds in there. So if you're looking to pay for something, then what you would do, you would add yourself, okay? You would add yourself. I'm sorry, if you're looking to buy something with the 1099A, you would add yourself to the process. Now, before you do this, make sure you're in agreement with whoever you're buying a house from. You're in agreement with whoever you're buying a car from. You're in agreement with whoever you're paying to do a service for, okay? That way they can give you, they can say, okay, go ahead and file it. They'll know it's filed. You'll get a message that's been approved, and I'll tell you that here in a second, and then that person can go and do the part that they need to do, okay? But make sure you have talked to those individuals. Make sure that they actually accept it, okay? And then you would add yourself, okay? You would click add, and you would put individual and put your information in here. Pretty self-explanatory, okay? All right, and then you would put the date, whatever the date is. The little calendar would drop down, okay? And then you would put the amount here. Now, if you are looking to purchase a home, okay, if you're looking to purchase a home, the first number is the cost of the house, the actual cost. So let's say that you're looking to buy a house and the house is $250,000, okay? You will put that right here. Then down here, you will put the house plus any fees, right? The commission fees, the taxes, whatever fees that are associated with it. Now, whoever you're dealing with will tell you how to fill this out, okay? Whoever you do, because they know how to, that they accept the 1099A, they will tell you what numbers are put there. Same thing with the car. You put the cost of the car here. If there's any registration fees or state taxes or what have you, that number will go here. But again, make sure you're in agreement with the individual that you're making this purchase from. If somebody's doing, if you're paying somebody to do work for them, okay, like my company accepts 1099As for some of my programs and some of my services, then I will tell you what numbers to put here. Most times I just put the same number, all right? There's no change. And then you leave this box blank, and then you will put the description of the property. So if you're buying a house, it will be like the purchase order number, or it will be the account number of some sort. If you're buying a car, you will put the purchase order number in here. Or you would say, you know, you put the description. Description, if it's a house, you'll put like the address here. You know, you put 123 Main Street, okay? If it's a car, you will put a 2021 Mercedes, you know, E-Class or something like that, okay? Description of the property, and then down here is where you will put the account number. So if it's a house, whatever account number is associated with that with that house. If it's a car, the purchase order number, okay? If you're paying somebody to do a service for you, then it's whatever account number that they create. They will tell you what number to put there. I create account numbers for my clients there, okay? And then you make sure everything is good. Make sure your information is good here. And then you will put finish. Now, through 1099A, you would have to purchase, I think it's like $3.49 per filing, okay? And then you would hit finish, follow the instructions, pay, and submit. And in about 4 days, you'll get it either say accepted or say declined, or you have to make some changes on the form, okay? Now, if you're looking to pay a bill, right? If you're looking to pay a bill, then it's different. What you want to do is that you want to add yourself, okay? You're the lender, okay? Because now that is coming because you're the individual who is paying the debt. But again, this is coming from your trust at the Treasury, okay? So you would put yourself. So right here, as you can see, I put myself here. I'm not going to show my information, but you would not edit. My apologies. You would do add, and you will put individual, and then you will put your information here, okay? All of your information here, but there's a way that you fill your name out. So it would be first, and then middle, and then last, like this, okay? No, not like that. Then it'd be last, okay? That's how you would do that, okay? And then this also would be beneficiary. That's how you want to fill your information out. Now, if it doesn't allow you to do the hyphen here, you put the hyphen here. All right? If it doesn't allow you to do the colon here, you do the colon after middle. Okay? Just make sure that that is in there. There's a hyphen between first and middle. There's a colon before last, and you want to put beneficiary. You want to put your address. All right? And when you do zip code, you want to do, it won't let you do the brackets. All right? Normally, you would have to have the brackets in there. And then you put your phone and your email address, and then you would hit add, okay? Now, and then down here, you will put the name of the company that you're looking to pay, okay? So you would hit add, and then you will put business. Now, the thing here is that you would have to locate the company's EIN or TIN number. You could just do a Google search. Let me see if I can pull one. Okay, Hyundai is one of the companies that I'm looking to, you know, get that account paid off with my car, okay? And so what I did, I put Hyundai TIN number, and this popped up. HIPAA.com has a lot of that information, okay? So I just clicked here, and you can see here, here's the number. And what I did, I entered it right here. And you're going to have to type it in. They're not going to let you copy and paste. So, all right, so you type that in, and then you fill out all the information. Hyundai.
Okay, everybody. All right, that comes to the end of that plug. Now, keep in mind, you can get a hold of this information back there on YouTube. Just go back and listen to the broadcast, and you can get some of the stuff you need to see. But I try to get as much of it as I can to run on this broadcast. But before we go to a break, we're going to bring in a little bit more of this definition. Okay. Now we're going to deal with bond for discharge. This is the creditor hold the side of the bond, evidence of a debt. When you use a bond for discharge, you're using your credit backed by the implied bond, which is the debt, resulting from your pledges to help the U.S. through its bankruptcy. There's no value limit to this bond, as you voluntarily agree to pledge everything of substance you ever get until the money is put back into circulation. All the substance you have, cars, dirt, shoes, food, toothbrushes, was acquired by giving the merchants Federal Reserve notes. You can never get title to things unless you pay for them. Since there is no money in the U.S., only debt paper. Every time you get a pair of shoes, you're exchanging a debt. In the U.S. since 1933, that is an acceptable practice outside the U.S. is states. In the states, that is not acceptable. If you tried to get shoes without paying for them in the states, you would be put in jail for stealing. But in the jurisdiction of the U.S., you can get possession of the shoes by giving the merchant debt paper. You just can't get title. If you want the title, you will have to give merchant a real asset from the private side, substance. The only substance that is yours is your exemption. That equates to credit, admiralty, and equity. Okay? Now keep in mind, we can define this stuff right there in Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition. Mr. Patman, under the new law. Well, first of all, March 9th, 1933, the 73rd Congress. Mr. Patton, under the new law, the money is issued to the banks in return for government obligations, bills of exchange, drafts, notes, trade acceptances, and business acceptances. The money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by the credit of the nation. It will represent what? A mortgage on all homes and all property, all the people in the nation. Mr. Patman, the money so issued will not have one penny of gold coverage behind it because it is really not needed. The bills of exchange of government obligations are not to the private investor. Got it? Private and public. The banker's acceptances are government obligations. When you accept a presentment for value and sign it, it has just done a banker's acceptance. Public banks can also do a banker's acceptance. It's not designed to just one side or the other. Have you asked who is issuing the new money to the banks? Can the government issue money to the banks? Can other banks issue money to the banks? Where is this new money that is going to be issued to the banks? Where does the bank go when it wants to be issued more money? The people have been always been private bankers in the states in America. Now, we also have public bankers. The people use to dig gold and silver out of the ground, have it minted, and then put into circulation. Now the people sign notes and give them to the banks to turn it into debt money, and the banks put the debt into circulation as money. It would be against the law for the people to do that. They have to issue their credit money to the bank to do through the straw man. When you use the U.S. bond, even though it is an implied bond, to discharge a public debt, the debt is discharged. House Joint Resolution 192 is the written public insurance policy guaranteed that this can be done. The people are still issuing new money to the banks by signing notes and giving them to the banks. You see how this process works? Okay. Now, we're going to get down into some more definition, but I'm going to go back over here, and we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back. Get on back down into the broadcast, because we want to deal with these bonds and the UCC. We got quite a bit of information to cover here, so y'all hold your head and we'll be right back. Okay? Hold on. everybody. We're back. Now, let's get down into rest of this subject matter here. I'll just hold on 1 second. Okay, let's deal with the term implied. This word is used in law in contrast to express, i.e., where the intention in regards to the subject matter is not manifested by explicit and direct words, but is gathered circumstances, the general language, or the conduct of the parties. Used to discharge, U.S. Mr. Patman said the new money of the homes and other property. He used the word nation with an expansive intent. There were and are no people in the nation. The nation is a political creation, but there are people behind all the straw men, which are in the nation. On a mortgage, there's always a debtor and a creditor. The new money was issued based on the people and U.S. corporations in their gold. The corporations were controlled by the U.S., but the people were not. The corporations had no substance, but the people did. The people volunteered to enter an implied contract with the U.S. The New Deal was announced in Congress in March of 1933. The executive order was given in April. The gold had to be deposited in the Federal Reserve banks by May 1st. The Congress proclaimed its public policy in House Joint Resolution 192 in June. The new public policy was that no creditor on this new mortgage could require payment in any particular form of U.S. coin or currency. As creditors, the people could not require payment for any new mortgage in gold. Neither could any other creditor that the New Deal made the people who participated in the salvation of the U.S. corporation. Creditors, it always made debtors. It also made debtors of the U.S. corporations, the officers, agents, and employees, including all the straw men. Okay, well, let's get down in this right here and open this here up. This is an example of set-off and adjustment of mutual debts. The straw man owes debt to a U.S. corporation agency, and the U.S. owes a debt through an implied promise to the man. The U.S. can never pay the man because there is no money, but the U.S. can give the straw man debt money it can use in commerce in the U.S. to use to get possessions or products and services for you. You get to use the products or services. When you use a bond to discharge a public debt, you have used your exemption, your credit, which is the only title you can have on the private side. You are an investor in the U.S. corporation. That does not make you, it makes you a creditor. Okay? Now, I'm trying to give you as much definition as I possibly can involve in this process. We could have some clear and concise understanding about what we're doing when we're talking about set off, charging a debt, and so forth. Okay? All right. Now, let's get down and start dealing with some of this, some of these bonds and the UCC. We're also going to get down into some of Gene Keaton stuff here this evening, but we want deal with the your bond in the UCC so we can get some understanding on what that is about. But we got a lot of rain out here this evening down here in Florida, man, and I hope we don't get knocked off the air here. So I'm trying to and I'm not looking forward. I just want to make sure that we get as much stuff done as we possibly can. Now, where is this thing? Where it is? I just finished looking at it. Hold on a minute. Let me find this stuff and get it over there to you. What is it? I just got through looking at it a minute ago. Where are you, little fella? Okay, I see you there. I see you there. Okay.
What's up, guys? Bad Wolf back at it. All right, so this one, I guess I must have mentioned something about a UCC-1 filing, and some of you guys are pretty quick. Thank you guys for reaching out to me and telling me, hey, I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you for not trying to charge an arm and a leg for this information. But somebody had mentioned that I talked about a UCC-1. Now, what a UCC-1 is basically it's an international filing, okay? It's kind of like a notice to the world of what's going on. Now, on our site, the state of Wisconsin site, on the left-hand side, all the way at the bottom, it says just says UCC on there or UCC filings, and most people ignore it. They don't know what it is. Filing a UCC-1 is detrimental to you, especially as a state citizen or a national or anybody, even as a U.S. citizen. This is one of the best ways and most crucial ways you can protect yourself, okay? So what it is it's basically your straw man, okay? Your all caps name will appear in there. If anybody has a lien or a judgment against you, you'll see that pop up in there. They're saying they have first claim and right to your assets. So before you can sell anything or do anything, those people have to be paid out before the next person can come in line and try to get your stuff. Now, the reason why this is important is because you can become a secured party investor. Okay. So basically you're like your own bank. That's what it is, secured party investor. So, but of yourself over your own straw man. So in short, what you want to do is go to your state's website. Find the UCC filing on there. It's like $5, maybe $20, something like that each. I think it's like five for real though. They're good for 5 years. So after 5 years, you do have to refile your information, or not so much refile, but update it. Just say, yes, it's still there. It's pending, and pay another $5. I think it is, maybe 10, depending on your state. It's going to be a little different. Now, what you do is you're going to take your name, okay, with your capital letter and then all the rest lowercase, you know, same thing for your last name. And you're going to put a lien against yourself. I would recommend putting on there at least $1 million, okay? Now, the debtor, okay, which is you, okay, but it's your all caps name, okay? So do you see where I'm going with this? So when you file for this, they're going to say, who are you? And you're going to put in your name. And then the other one is going to say, well, who are you filing this against? You're going to file it against your same, your first name, middle initial or full name, and then last name, all in caps, okay? Because that's your straw man. So when anytime someone tries to go against after your straw man, whether it's the city, the state, a legal judgment, whatever it is, they have to pay out that $1 million before anybody can touch it. So if they go after you for $20,000, okay, they say, hey, you have to owe us $20,000. Well, then, okay, fine, I'll pay you $20,000. You have to pay out that $1 million lien against me first if you want to try to get it, okay? So until that's paid out, they can't take any of that stuff. So put a lien against your own house, your own car, all of your property. Use every variation of your straw man name. Okay, so your name, first letter capitalized, lowercase, okay, and you're going to file it against your all caps name, okay? And let's see here, do that. So basically, yeah, put all of your information on there. They're going to give you a really long number, okay, and that number you're going to want to keep. Now, what I did from my passport, I put my personal traveler plate number in my UCC-1 filing, meaning that I own that, and then I put on there that if you guys want more information or if it has to be registered somewhere, here's my registration number. So see what we did there? So because the DMV talks about you can have a plate, but they also kind of want it to have a there's alternative registration, though they wouldn't exactly tell me what that means. So, okay, I have a registration. Here's my UCC filing number. Here's my plate on there with my information. All right. I feel like I'm forgetting something. So you might want to look up UCC1, filing, becoming a secured party investor. I think there's something small in there, like when you put in, you have to put in like your email so they can contact you in case somebody, you know, has a claim, you know. But I think it's also like you don't want to use your zip code when for you as your person. For your straw man, yes. For your person, I believe you don't want to put on there. And there's something like registered agent. I think that's where you want to put your, once again, your first initial lowercase name. So there's a couple spots in there you'll see your information. But I believe that's basically about it. But here's also what I did. I went a step farther, and I put in everything. I mean, this is going to sound a little silly to some of you guys, but this is how methodical I am, and this is how you have to kind of protect yourself. Not only did I put in all of my stuff, my car, my shoes, my clothes, I also put in hair, saliva, blood, whatever, because if they ever want to, let's say I'm traveling in my car, in my personal conveyance, and they want to blood test me, I put on there, this is the price on my UCC filing, you know, $5,000 for a fluid ounce of that on there. So when it comes to it, if they want to ignore all the stuff I have a legal claim and lien against this. So in my book, I have all that information in there. Okay, so I have my UCC filing that says that. That UCC filing, make copies of it. Put it inside of your binder that you keep inside of your book. Make a copy of it. Put it on your computer. Put it in your filing cabinet. That way, should you, for some reason, you've tried to avoid going to trial and whatever else, and you've told them, hey, everything you need to know before you guys do anything is in this book. Okay? So you have that in there for a layer of protection. That's all this stuff is that I'm giving you is layers of protection. So they say, oh, well, we have to take your DNA. Well, that's $5,000 or that's $200, you know, a hair or whatever else. You took my blood. That's $5,000. You know, that's what it is because it's private property, especially if you're not a U.S. citizen. When you're a U.S. citizen, they can do these things because you have agreed to be underneath their jurisdiction. When you're a state citizen, hey, before you do that, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. You should probably take a look at my binder. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to now take my right to plead the fifth, have your sergeant or CO, you know, come here and verify the information before you do anything because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. As a private citizen, state citizen, here's my information. And that's how you do things. All right. So I believe that's about it. If I miss anything, I'll make an update video. I believe that covers the basics of it, but and in case people ask how much can you set it for, you can set it for really as much as you want. How much do you want to put a value on your stuff? I would say don't be ridiculous. $1 million, $800 bajillion. Sorry, it's not really good, Dr. Evil. But anyway, I set mine for like $1 million, you know, for most, you know, everything basically all together, you know. House, car, blah, 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 you know, and then you can even have a breakdown of it, you know, this is worth this much, this is worth this much. If you want, do it however you want, be creative, just be concise, okay? Don't say, well, $500, you know, for per incident or something, you know, leave it vague. Nope, be specific, be a lawyer on their ASS, okay? All of my clothes all together, $50,000, you know, house, a lien of $200,000. All this adds up together to be $1 million. Depending on your state, it might be different, but so look and see if there's like limits to that. I don't think any of them are going to have that. So here's my philosophy. It's always catch me if you can. Okay, so I'm going to put on there, you know, $50,000 for, you know, a lien against my car. And basically you're saying that even though your car's worth this, you know, if you want to take it or do something to it and pound it, okay, but you have to pay out that $50,000. I have a lien against it. You don't have the right to it. You know, it's kind of like your house. You can't sell your house. If you got a secondary lien on there, you have to pay that off. Okay? You know, you can sell it, but you have to pay them before you get anything. So you see what I'm saying? So very ingenious. Don't just take my word for it. As always, do your own research on there. So look up UCC1 filing, look up secured, how to become a secured party investor. That's the short version of it. If there are some companies out there charging, man, I've seen everything from $500 to $10,000 for the information I just gave you guys, seriously. And it took me a long time to come up with all the information. And like I said, this is a short version of it. There's little tiny things. You can tweak it. I'm going to make another video, I think, on that or an aspect of that coming up shortly.
Okay, everybody. Now, keep in mind, we ran the same plug last week and on the UCC information. So I think now you already have it. Document called non-negotiable instrument, and which the same thing that this guy said. My saliva, my sweat, everything has value on it, and it's already been posted out there. But anyway, we're going to move in. But before we do, let's take another quick 5957. The chat room is open, so please be respectful if you get up in there. But y'all hold on a minute. Let's go to another commercial break.
Real estate is booming today. But one thing I learned a long time ago about mortgages and foreclosures, the real estate market goes in cycles, up and down. The best thing to do is get out of that type of situation early. The U.S. corporation is still operating in a bankrupt state today. Make no mistake about it. When it comes to your home, the bank has no skin in the game. When you sign for your home, it was paid for. Learn how to do that. The IRS is a private-for-profit corporation. Learn how to deal with that. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. How do you discharge debt? How do you write it up? What do you do? Learn how to do that. Contact me, Tahaka Manuel Bay. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Peace. What a fantastic way to live. Hello, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay, operating in the private as a secured party and creditor instead of living the life of a debtor. Now, to learn how to do that, you have to get the knowledge. There's no doubt about it. You don't mix public with private, just like oil and water don't mix. For the skill and know-how, go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Contact me, Tahaka. My number is on the website. Or send me an email. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Learn how to live the good life as a secured party and a creditor instead of a debtor. And eliminate your debts. Fun time is almost over. TahakaDebtElimination.org. Peace.
Okay, everybody, we're back now. Let's get back down into these definitions again on creditors and their bonds. Okay, number three, appearance bond. This is a bond that assures you will appear in court proceedings. It is not a catch-all bond that covers everything that will come up in the case. To get the appearance bond, you have to give your word, which is a bond, that you will appear to finish settling the accounting. It is issued by the hearing officer. If it is requested and if there is no controversy, if you are honorable enough not to start arguing with the hearing officer or the complaint or the prosecuting attorney, you can get this bond. There must be no controversy. The fact is established by your voluntary act of accepting the charging instrument for value and returning it. Credit for the discharge of the charges. You are bonding your pledge to appear and settle. If it were not voluntary, that would be bondage. You must tell the hearing officer that you are not disputing any of the facts. Dispute, a conflict, a controversy, and an assertion of a right, claim, or demand on one side, met by contrary claims or allegations on the other. The subject of a litigation, the matter for which a suit is brought and upon which issue us joined, and in relation to which jurors are called and witnesses examined. When you enter a dispute, you join the issue and confirm the existence of what was just an idea, materialize and give subject matter that can be tested by a jury or witnesses. Y'all got that? Once you ask for the bond, it is yours. If you ask for it again, it will appear that you do not know you already have it. And the hearing will proceed as though he is talking to a debtor straw man. You automatically get an appearance bond. It may be required to pay for a bail bond. An appearance bond with conditions incorporated, it costs to you. If you have requested the appearance bond, no cost to you, there will be no conditions to the release. If you do not ask for it that way, there may be conditions like drug testing, required meetings with court officers, or required daily or weekly phone calls. Those are a cost to you as you take your time and your property. If you don't appear and settle this accounting, you will be in dishonor of your word, your bond. And the appearance bond will be revoked. They will not tell you it has been revoked. Your dishonor will then be used to carry out the presumption that you are representing a straw man in a fiduciary capacity and that you are in breach of your fiduciary duty. That is not allowed in equity. The debt of the straw man will be put on you. If there is not enough property held in the name of the straw man to cover the dishonor, or if you as trustee refuse to turn over the trust property to settle the debt, they will take your body as surety for the debt. It is the trustee's body being taken. You volunteer to be the trustee. Okay. And when we come back, we'll get down in the charging order and the rest of the stuff. But as for now, let's go back to the broadcast, and I hope you got some clarity on that, and so that we can continue. But before we do, we're going to take another little quick break, and when we come back, then we'll be ready to go. So y'all hold your hat. We'll be right back. Back down into the rest of this stuff here and see what we're dealing with. Okay, now, a charging order. Let's deal with that. Let's define that for you. What's a charging order? A statutory created means for a creditor, the plaintiff, of a judgment debtor, the debtor, who is a partner of others, you, to reach the debtor's beneficial interest in the partnership, your credit, without risking dissolution of the partnership. Uniform Partnership Act S.S. 28. The purpose of the court case is for the judge to test the facts of an accounting. He is the auditor. A possible dispute between a creditor and a debtor. The creditor always wins. It is a matter of how much the debtor will pay that is being determined in a court case. Audit. Systematic inspection of accounting records involving analysis, tests, and confirmations. The hearing and investigation have been an auditor. A formal or official examination and authentication of accounts with witness, vouchers, etc. Audit, he hears a hearing. From audio, to hear. Auditor, an officer of the court assigned to the state. The items of debt and credit between the parties in a suit where accounts are in question and exhibit the balance. In the rules of civil procedure in many states, the term master is used to describe those persons formerly known as auditors. Y'all got that? Okay. Magistrate. magister, a master from magi, sorcery from Greek magi, the theology of magicians, vouch to give personal assurance of serve as a grantee, a receipt, acquaintances of release which may serve as evidence of payment or discharge of a debt, or to carry the correct surety bond. The surety bond is used to subrogate liability for a surety bond to relieve someone who is in dishonor or potential financial damage. You can indemnify an honorable party who may have made a mistake by volunteering to be his surety. This is often the case with the judge. If you do this, you are moving into creditor position because you are taking responsibility for the parties are requested. The one who is volunteering to be the surety. Number two, the debtor. And number three, the creditor. There can be more than one creditor and more than one debtor. Creditor status can change during the case. You have to be the debtor. The prosecuting attorney signed not bond in the case file, and there is no signed security agreement. He is going to be the debtor. The judge, he wants to settle or have the case dismissed, he stays in honor. You may have to authorize him to act in dishonor. He is the one who you left holding the bag. You can bond the party. C6. We're going to stop right there. And we're going to get back into some more of this stuff, but I wanted to define some of the terminology. When we come back, we'll deal with suretyship, okay? All right, let's press forward and go on back down into this thing here and see what we're working with, okay? All right, let's see what we got here. All right, so we covered that. Okay, there's one, two, or three. Deal with the UCC. Okay. Private and public. Let's deal with that. Just
and public records. The mirror image. Democracy and the public are reflections of us. If the public is dysfunctional, it is because we are. An entity is a reflection of a living thing. The observations are the mirror image of the observer. As creditors, we are empty and neutral. Every event is neutral. We don't make anything up about it when we give it meaning. Creditors don't fight with the reflection. We bring remedy. It is a responsibility of a creditor to forgive one's own debts and the debts of others. They're not wrong and you're not right, or vice versa. Creditors accept offers, which is taking control, legal title, and honoring them. Creditors don't take positions. Creditors ask questions. When someone approaches you with a position, your questions seek to establish those positions and uncover the facts. Creditors don't make presumptions or assumptions, nor argue the facts. Creditors operate under unlimited liability, therefore complete responsibility. Whenever you feel you know what you are doing, rebut those presumptions. Act fresh and new in every moment. Be impeccable with your words. If you say you're going to do something, then do it. Especially in commerce, don't take anything personally. It's just business. Treat even the belligerent with respect. Give all you've got in all your endeavors and undertakings. Creditors clean up messes that debtors make. Private records are not recorded into the public. Claims recorded into the public give up title to your claim. You abandon them. Principal, one who authorizes another to act on his or her behalf as an agent or one who has primary responsibility on an obligation as opposed to a surety or endorser. A principal can be a surety or the corpus of an estate or trust. Undisclosed principal, a principal who is kept secret by the agent. A principal for whom the other party has no notice that the agent is acting. When you refuse to take responsibility for your public trust, steps in to take responsibility. In a court, it's the judge. He assumes that you've abandoned the trust or that you are a dysfunctional trustee, especially if you argue. He becomes the agent of your strawman principal. You're the authorized rep, trustee, surety. An undisclosed principal and the agent are both liable on a contract entered into by the agent with the principal's authority. A principal creditor, a creditor whose claim or demand greatly exceeds the claims of other creditors, also known as paramount security interest. Secured party, a person in whose favor a security interest is created, liable for the payment of another's debt or the performance of another's obligation. Although a surety is similar to an insurer, sureties often receive no compensation for assuming direct liability. Does your strawman pay you? A surety differs from a guarantor who is liable to the creditor only if the debtor does not meet the duties owed to the creditor. A surety is directly liable. Another definition of a surety is a formal assurance, which can be a pledge, bond, guarantee or security given in fulfillment of an undertaking. If a U.S. citizen has a debt or an obligation, who do they pin it on? You. You're the surety and the duly authorized representative, one who is empowered in a proper or lawful manner to act on behalf of another. What are you doing when you bond out of prison? You're putting something up. Somebody put something up to act as a surety for you to appear. If you don't bond, you don't go anywhere. The public cannot interact with real people. Public records have nothing to do with substance. Their realm is form. If it's not in the proper form, county recorders won't take it. You may have to take it to judicial review to get whatever you're trying to get recorded. Go by their form. Court cases have forms and formats that you must go by. If it's not proper form, it doesn't mean anything. Notices. Evidence of liabilities. In a bankrupt society, there are no assets in the public. Disneyland. A bank asserts with a deed of trust that they loaned you money, but they didn't. You and only you signed it. One-sided contract. All substances in private records. When you take substance and put it in the public, the substance is lost, and therefore has no meaning. When you do that, you give up legal title and you are subject to public policy. Claims. Assets. Regarding security agreements and POAs, file just a notice in the public. Tax liens are private. Notices of tax liens are filed into the public, recorded at the county recorder. They have a certification of your dishonor somewhere in the private. Certification of records. If your claim or private record has a notary seal or you've had a notary make presentment and you've got certification through the third party of a dishonor or whatever, the notary seal itself is an authentication. If you add on top of that a certification from the cessee of state, you now have a self-authenticating document. You can take that claim anywhere in the world and it has weight if you know how to use it. You can record a notice of your claim and thereby enforce your claim in the public. UCC filings. Use the public record to take control of the trust. The most powerful document that you can file in public record as far as claims or notices of claims go is a UCC-1. Do not use a UCC-1 to file a claim against an IRS agent or a judge. You will end up in jail unless you have a legitimate claim which you can back up. With a UCC-1, we establish a public record that shows our relationship with our U.S. corporation. UCC documents are public documents. Living men cannot file a UCC-1. It is a public form. Living beings cannot file public documents. The birth certificate trust is a non-resident alien. It is a member of the Republic. The SS-5 established another trust, the U.S. citizen or resident citizen. We accept the BC for value and take control of the foreign situs trust, that individual evidenced by the BC. We want to establish that our private entity serves as trustee over all of the strawman's property. Not as a surety, but as the controller of the property. This has come to be known as a Baylor-Bailey filing. Baylor, strawman places property into the trust. Bailey, strawman or private citizen of the Republic, manages and controls the property. Bailment, a delivery of personal property by one person, the Baylor, to another, the Bailey, who holds the property for a certain purpose under an express or implied in fact contract to which the parties have agreed. Unlike a sale or gift of personal property, a bailment entails a change of possession but not in title.
The relationship among three parties whereby one person, the surety, you, guarantees payment of debtors, the defendant, debt owed to a co-debtor to co-defendant. Obligation, and another person. The defendant is also under an obligation or other duty to give energy, credit to the obliged plaintiff who is entitled to but one performance, and as between the two who are bound, you and the defendant, one rather than the other should perform. Suretyship, bond, a contractual agreement created by the signature on the application of the birth certificate between the surety, you, the principal defendant, and the obliged plaintiff, whereby surety, you, agrees to protect the obliged plaintiff if the principal defendant defaults in performing the principal's contractual obligation, discharging debt, or in any dishonor the plaintiff. The bond, you, your written word, is the instrument which binds surety, which is you. The surety bond is delivered to one who dishonored you. It is wise to have evidence of the dishonor before you issue your surety bond. Satisfactory evidence could be a certificate from a notary after an administrative process has been completed to assure there really is a dishonor. You might just think you were dishonored. If you are in dishonor yourself and have not corrected the mistake, you are in a position to be claiming you have been dishonored. This is a very narrow window. You must always approach equity with clean hands. The surety bond is also delivered to the bonding company. If the one in dishonor is a public officer with the bond, it is also delivered to the clerk of court. If there is a court case in process, always get a certified copy of the surety bond from the clerk after it is filed. Okay? All right. Case bond. This bond is the nature of replevin bond. A replevin bond was formerly used in common law equity property in dispute. The moving party was required to bond his charge claim before he could get temporary possession of the subject property. The replevin bond was double the value of the subject property. Part of it was the indemnity. The sheriff who seized the subject property from the defendant in possession, the order part, reimbursed at least for the value not returned to him in the evidence charges. Your mouth is. That is what's happening when charges are brought in court and the moving party bonds the case. The policy assures the defendant will not be damaged by unsupported complaint charges until after the case is decided by the man. The defendant is almost always in dishonor, so the prosecutor on the case. It is really the defendant's representative that is bonding the case. Again, it is the man. If the defendant is in dishonor because of what his representative trustee said or did, the trustee's credit that is used to satisfy the debt, charge the bond. You can voluntarily bond the case if there is no bond already in the clerk's file. Be sure to get a certified copy of the docket sheet as evidence there is no bond in the case before you issue your bond. When you bond the case, you are the creditor and creditors win. If you bond the case, become the creditor, and then dishonor or the judge, the attorneys, or the processes in any way, you will lose your position as a creditor and go back to represent the defendant. All of this honor depends on the defendant, even if you are the one who went into dishonor. Through your words or your actions, the defendant cannot talk or act. It all comes from you. If you bond the case and underwrite all the obligations, lost costs of the honorable citizens of the state of John Doe, that will include the attorney as long as he is honorable. If he is not, he refuses the indemnification and volunteers to have his dishonor commercial energy to the settlement. It is up to him. The judge will go along with what he requests. Usually, the attorney will tell the judge the plaintiff moves to dismiss. All right. When we come back, we'll deal with the performance bond, okay? But right now, we're going to go on down into some of Gene Keating's stuff on the bond. And we're going to deal with some of his information. We'll be right back. So y'all hold on a minute. Let's see what he got to say about this.
Hey, everybody. This is Dave from Verified News, FreedomWatch.us channel. And today we're going to go over page one. Since we've done all the sites and definitions for page one, I'm going to do page one of the Gene Keating Treatise. I'm going to read it to you and go over what I think it all means after looking everything up. And the text, what I'm going to be reading, the text will be either linked below or inserted below in the info box. There may not be room to print the whole text to the page. All right. Gene Keating, Cracking the Code, number 7, February 2005, and this is copyrighted, so don't think of trying to sell it. Not by me, it's copyrighted by something else. I'm just reading it to you. The courts are operating under statute law. A statute is defined in Black's 4th edition, revised, as a kind of bond or obligation of record, being an abbreviation for statute merchant or statute staple. Okay, so what he's saying here is the statute is actually kind of a bond or an obligation. It's a contract. We'll let him explain that. Statute merchant is defined as a security for a debt acknowledged to be due, entered into before the chief magistrate of some trading town, pursuant to the statute 13, Eduardo de Mercatoribus, by which not only the body of the debtor might be imprisoned and his goods seized in satisfaction of the debt, but also his lands might be delivered to the creditor till out of the rents and profits of them the debt be satisfied. This was also called the pocket judgment, which I never looked up, pocket judgment. And what he's saying here is that a statute is security. So, for instance, how might a statute be security? Well, the government says, we need to borrow money and we'll pass this statute that requires everybody to have a driver's license and pay fees as security for that debt. I think that's where my brain goes with that. Of course, you know, he's not specifically saying that, but the implication seems to be that's exactly what it is, that the statute is a security. Okay. A form of bond or obligation to secure a debt, okay, for a debt acknowledged to be due, entered into before a chief magistrate, blah, 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 blah. Now, if we, I did refer you to 13 Edward, and you'll read statute merchant and statute staple there. Statute merchant includes statute staple, which is a 1353 statute establishing the procedure for settling disputes among merchants who trade, for settling disputes among merchants who traded in staple towns. The statute helped merchants receive swift judgment for debt. Statute merchant 2, a bond or commercial debt. A statute staple gave the lender a possessory right in the land of a debtor who failed to repay a loan. See staple. A staple is like an area that's a market, you know, like the United States, that is under a lord or a magistrate or a mayor is what they're under. So a city is a staple, actually. It's an incorporated business district where you have to have a license to do business in that district. Okay, so the important thing is that this statute establishing procedures for settling disputes among merchants. So statute staple and statute merchant, at least statute staple only applies between merchants. I'm not sure about statute merchant. I'd assume it's the same. Now, something I've been reading while, of course, I'm trying to crack codes in other states besides Massachusetts, so I pick random states and read stuff sometime. One thing I read while I was trying to figure out what status they were putting you under in Oklahoma statutes for travel, I came across a suspicious little entity called an itinerant merchant. And they may be categorizing us as itinerant merchants, which makes anything which puts us under statute staple. It's a theory. It's just that itinerant merchants seem to be a pretty... Should go read the definition of itinerant merchant in the Oklahoma statutes. You'll see what I mean. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm going to put this on pause before I continue because I have water boiling for my dinner. All right, then, continuing. Let's see where we left off. Statute staple gave the lender a possessory right in the land of a debtor who failed to repay a loan. See staple. Okay, a popular form of, he's got this in quotes, and it's from J.H. Baker, An Introduction to English Legal History, 354, 3rd edition, 1990. A popular form of security after 1285 was the statute staple, whereby the borrower could, by means of a registered contract, charge his land and goods without giving up possession. If he failed to pay, the lender became a tenant of the land until satisfied. The borrower, under a statute or recognizance, remained in possession of his land, and it later became a common practice under common law forms of mortgage likewise to allow the mortgager to remain in possession as a tenant at will or at the sufferance of the mortgage. J. H. Baker, An Introduction to, blah, blah. Okay, so basically, the statute staple secures land for repayment of a debt or an obligation. And you can also, your body can also be involved in that. Okay, recognizance. A bond or obligation of record binding a person to some act as to appear in court and subject to forfeit of money if obligation is not fulfilled. FIFA is a short for Latin phrase, fieri facias, let it be made, was a court execution to the sheriff to levy on the property of a debtor in order to satisfy a judgment. See judgment and execution dockets above. The sheriff might typically keep track of FIFAs in a sheriff's FIFA docket book, usually written on a fill-in-the-blank form. A FIFA names the parties to the court judgment and the value of property to be taken to satisfy the judgment. On the back, the sheriff or his deputies annotate their actions in carrying out the order. The FIFAs were to be returned to the court which issued them and the actions annotated on the judgment docket. Theoretically, the docket books should contain everything that was noted on the FIFAs. In Webster's 1913 dictionary, the word stand is defined as being also the word statute. I believe this is why the judge in every court always asks you to understand the charges being assessed against you. In the Old English, it is understandan, to stand under or to be subjected to or under the control of, or I am subjecting or agreeing to put myself under the control of or putting myself under the statute or bond of record. I have been doing more research on our prison system via the internet and have found some interesting things regarding what is really going on in the courtroom. The court is looking for an acceptance and an acceptor under 3410 of the UCC as the principal has the primary obligation to pay or discharge any instrument presented for acceptance. Since they are presenting a bill of exchange, parentheses indictment, for acceptance. This is called an acceptance for honor, which involves a negotiable instrument, especially a bill of exchange, that, or an indictment, as he's putting here, parentheses, which means all parties have to agree, that has been accepted for payment. The complaint, information, or indictment is a three-party draft, commercial paper, or bill of exchange under Article 3 of the UCC. The grand jury foreman is the drawer or maker of the indictment by his signature. The defendant debtor or straw man is the drawee, and the state is the payee, and the live man is the payor. What they are doing in the courtroom is all commercial. This is in conformity to 27 CFR 72.11, where it says, now he says all, and I'll say some, where it says some crimes are commercial. Because if you look at it, it lists a specific number of crimes, but it doesn't certainly does not list all crimes. So that's 27 CFR 72.11. And I've looked at that, and it's actually in, of course, it's in one of the page breakdown vids that I did where all this stuff is all looked up. But where it says, I'll just say where it says crimes are commercial. I'll leave the all out and let you decide after you've read that 27 CFR 7211. Okay, what the judge and the prosecutor are doing in the courtroom is making a commercial presentment under Section 3-501, and one, unless excused, is print quotes, unless excused, Section 3-511 present, okay, the way this reads is, one, that's the site from 3-501, unless excused, parentheses, Section 3-511, in parentheses, presentment is necessary to charge secondary parties as follows. Secondary parties. Does that mean you're a secondary party? I don't know. I'm not sure. A. Presentment for acceptance is necessary to charge the drawer and endorser of a draft where the draft so provides or is payable elsewhere than at the residence or place of business of the drawee. Okay, that's page one. What that last thing said there is that presentment in this case means, under the UCC, means you present a bill to someone who has an obligation to pay it. Like you take your paycheck to the bank. That's presenting, and you present your check. And that's necessary to charge the drawer of the check, who is your employer, and you endorse the draft where the draft so provides, and it's payable, or it might be payable elsewhere than at the residence or place in business of the bank, or some other things. But that's what they're talking about presentment. So anyway, that's page one, and the breakdown of all the definitions of all these terms and what he's talking about are in my videos, Gene Keating Treatise, page 1A and page 1B, which breaks this all down. And I've already started on page 2, and I just decided to go ahead and do the review of page 1 here, and we'll make that a regular feature of this series. So I'll be making a playlist, and this will be included in it. Anyway, this is Dave from Verified News, FreedomWatch.us channel. And don't forget to donate. I have received a donation, so the next video is actually paid for. And
okay. Now, let's get back down into our definition of this terminology. We're dealing with number 7, your performance bond. Performance bonds guarantee that parties to contract will not be damaged by conduct of an officer. This could include an executor, trustee, officer of a court, officer of a corporation, guardian, etc. If there is a fiduciary duty, there may be a need for a performance bond in common law. In the modern states and integrated court system, bonds are backed by insurance companies. They are actually insurance policies. Performance bond, type of contract bond which protects against loss due to the contract to perform his contract, such as normally required on public construction projects. Official condition that he shall perform all the duties of the office. Contractor, one who is in pursuit of independent business, undertakes to perform a job or piece of work, retaining in himself of accomplishing the desired result. Construction, interpretation of statute, regulation, court decisions, or other legal authority. The process or the act of determining the sense, meaning, or proper explanation of obscure, complex, ambiguous terms or provisions in a statute, or the application of such subject to the case in question. By reasoning in light observed from actions or writings, hearing upon the same or a connected matter, or by seeking and applying the probable aim or conclusion respecting subjects that lie beyond the direct expression of the term. Okay, let's roll down. Okay, to refute by law, right and power of having or doing the advantage of this declines it. A refusal implies or at least evidential determination not to comply. Power, authority to do any act which the grantor you might himself lawfully perform. The following is taken from a search of a library in America. Two officers of government find the phrase. References to the Constitution for the United States of America are provided below. Okay. Any office of honor, trust or profit under the United States Article 1, Section 3. Any office of honor, trust or profit under the United States Article 1, Section 9. Any senator, representative, or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States Article 2, Section 1. Any office of public trust under the United States Article 4, Clause 5. Sufficient to say trillions of dollars in today. You can verify this if you study the comprehensive videos about this back in the day. It's called the cap. That each corporate entity with the United States in empire is required regulations for the use of the trust property of those persons in accepting protection and receiving property. Trust property may remain in the so-called public partners or corporations, or it may be conveyed into the private domain. It is all effectively trust property, public and private, until it is taken out of protection of the trust. Okay, now we'll be coming back, and we're going to deal with the rules of the game. But let's go back and deal with whatever else that we got to go. We are 1 hour and 9 minutes left on the broadcast, and we're going to take another little quick break, and we'll proceed. So y'all hold your head. Okay, listen. The fiction real can fix the public and private public debt. This is against the law. A creditor can issue a bond, evidence of a public debt. Public debt. You cannot use public private credit. The numbers are public. Yeah. Now you can always go back to this broadcast. The system is use your private routing number, EIN, to close the account number. You are private. You are a private. Accept it and put on a UCC-1 financial statement. Your acceptance of the account number takes to the private side of the adjustment and set off. You give notice to John Snow or his prosecutor, assessor, that you had accepted the account. Third-party collateral rights are private. Side, even without filing the UCC-1. The UCC-1 is to give notice of rights. That is why you can use the account for adjustment and set off of public debts. There is no money on the private side. Debt is used on the public side to discharge other public debts. There is no money on the public side either, but debt is accepted. I know you got that. You got a dollar bill. You say, well, is it money? You don't see the word money put it on, printed on a note. That's because it ain't. It's a debt note. You got the money. And if you cover your debts with. Debt is used on the public side to discharge the public debt. Debt is accepted as money. The debts are all owed to you by the public. Can you use or discharge public debts? A debtor is a liability to the debtor. A debt is liability to a debtor and an asset. A bond each time you use your credit. You can bond your bill of exchange or use a bond. Either way, it is a bond, evidence of a public debt owed to you, that discharges the public debt. Because it is a fictitious entity or you are a real man, then it must file a claim against the straw man to get to you. Does it want your body in jail? The money is in your bank account, your house, your business. The answer is no. It wants your credit. It already has the rest of it because everything is either registered or found on registered property. The state does not want the things that are held in the name of the straw man, but it has no compunction against taking those things. If you dishonor it in any way, all those things except your body belong to the straw man, which is an officer. Straw man, which is an officer in one of his states. They do not belong to you. The money, the Federal Reserve notes, belong to the Federal Reserve because to use it as long as the rules. The title to the real property, man. The business license for your business issued to the straw man. The registration for the cardinal. The driver's license was issued to the straw man. None of those assets belong to you. Straw man, unless it fails to follow the rules. Presentment as a complaint. A moving party. What is it trying to move? What is the issue or grounds for the complaint? Complaint. Why would the state care if a piece of paper violated a fictitious law? What is the motivation? State is trying to move you to can move dishonor. Does the state really have a complaint, or is it just asking for your help? Maybe the complaint is that it's out of money. There's no money. None on the private side, gold and silver. None on the public side, except your credit. Now we ought to have this stuff down to a science. Does the office's manager do what it needs more paper clips? It requisitions the guys paper clips. Of course not. That would be counterproductive to the purpose of the business. Think of the state as your business. You need to be sure your business may fail. Why would you refuse to honor the requisition? Why would you argue about whether or not you fill out properly? Why would you deny you are the proper party? Why would you ignore the requisition? Why would you get mad and start charging the messenger with fraud? If you spend all your boss's money trying not to fulfill the requisition, that leave you. Your business is down the tubes. You might be in jail for breach of contract. Your property has been... All the people would depend on your resources of your product are irresponsible businessman. You will still be on top, on the top floor. Instead, the trust assets are gone and you are making substance. It has no money. It has no inherent right to anything except what it has created, which is a straw man. It has a very function. It has been charged with providing for the means by which you can go into a grocery store, gas station, and march. It does not get money from somewhere. It cannot continue to provide the infrastructure you has its taxes, license, permit, and registration fees. Are a source of revenue that giant octopus feeding machine we have grown to love and depend on. It needs to feed off of you. Let the state use it, the strong to take it. If you have filed a claim against the straw man, the state doesn't even control that anymore. If you have a security party, secure party, it has additional expenses as trustee of the property held in the name of the straw man. The situation is getting worse for the state. Where will you continue supplying all these services? It has to go to you and ask you for your credit. Have you ever had to ask your dad for financial help after you left his house and were out on your own? It is embarrassing. The state does not want to just ask if it can use your credit. It will have to find creative ways to ask for it, get it, and save face in the process. The trick is for the state to ask you for your help without an unenlightened person, the U.S. citizen, being able to see it. The state must have your credit, and it is going to get it one way or the other. It is going to get it the easy way or the hard way. It is all up to you. So the only thing the state can't take is your body and other substances in your possession, unless you voluntarily authorize the state to use it. You always have a choice to retain possession of your substance or let the state take possession of it. Remember, possession is 9/10 of the law. What is the other 1/10 then? And we'll get down to that in a minute, but we're going to get back over here to the broadcast. And when we come back, we'll be dealing with honor. Rule number two, stay in honor at all costs, okay? So let's get down to here and see where we at here. Let's go on to And we need to deal with Mr. Keating here. And we have quite a bit of information here. Okay, let's deal with this OID. Here we go.
Welcome to another tutorial video. This time around, we're going to be discussing the concept of original issue discount, or OID, on debt issuances and explain how it works on the financial statements. So we actually get a lot of questions about this topic, and the typical question goes something like this. Can you explain what original issue discount, or OID, means and how to model it on a debt issuance in a three-statement model or LBO model? I've seen this concept in case studies and modeling tests before, but I'm not sure exactly how it works. So once again, we're going to go through this and give you a short answer if you're just looking to get a very, very quick answer to this question, and then we'll go through a longer answer that gives you a bit more of a flexible way of thinking about this. So original issue discount comes up when a company issues debt at a discount to its par value. So maybe a bond is worth 100. That's the face value of the bond, what the company will pay interest on, but the company issues it for only 90 or 95 or something like that. Usually this happens because the bond's coupon rate or interest rate is below the rates of other similar bonds, and the company needs to do something to incentivize investors to buy it, even though they could be earning higher interest elsewhere. Now, this could also happen if the company's credit quality is somewhat questionable and investors have doubts about its ability to eventually repay this bond as well. When this happens, the company amortizes this discount. So in the example with 100 and 90, it's a discount of 10, so they would amortize that discount of 10 over the total years that the bond remains outstanding on its financial statements, and the company will keep increasing the book value of debt on the balance sheet as this happens. But the company still pays interest based on the face value of the debt, the 100. Let's go into Excel quickly and show you what this looks like. So I have this exact scenario here. The par value is 100, the debt is issued at 90. On the balance sheet, initially, the company will record debt of 90, and then they will increase it by Q each year as we amortize that discount over time, over this five-year period. We assume here that this bond remains outstanding for 5 years. So the amortization is based on that 10 divided by the five-year amortization period, so Q each year here. The face value of the debt remains the same at 100 because nothing related to the original issue discount or the amortization of it affects this. Now, if you look on the other statements, on the income statement, for example, we have interest expense of 10 each year on the debt. Now, that is cash interest expense because we are assuming here that the debt interest rate is a fixed 10%, so that's where the 10 of interest here comes from. And then we also have amortization of the original issue discount, and both of these are components of the interest expense. So both these items will appear as interest expense on the income statement and will reduce the company's pre-tax income, their taxes, and their net income. Now, on the cash flow statement, the net income will be down as a result of the interest expense and the amortization of the original issue discount, but we add back the amortization of the original issue discount because it is a non-cash expense here, very similar to depreciation and amortization. If you think about the net impact of original issue discount in terms of how free cash flow changes, if we issued this at par value, so 100, let's say, our free cash flow would be very slightly lower in that scenario. So this amortization of original issue discount is a non-cash charge that reduces the company's tax bill slightly. And I have a quick summary of everything we just went through here. In this scenario, we get 12 in total interest expense, net income is lower, we add back the OID amortization, and the book value keeps increasing over time until it goes up to 100 at the end upon maturity. Now, the longer answer to this question is that if there are principal repayments, then we have to amortize the original issue discount more rapidly. So this scenario gets a bit more complicated. It's not as easy as just saying 2 per year or taking whatever the discount is and dividing by the number of years. Companies call this extra amortization or accelerated amortization something like the loss on unamortized original issue discount on repayment. This loss is based on the percent of debt principal that is repaid each year times the original issue discount balance after the amortization in this specific year. So if we have an original issue discount of 10, we have 2 of amortization in the first year, and we repay 20 of the debt principal in that first year. This will be based on the 20% of the debt principal that we repay, and then we subtract the amortization of the, in this year, the 2 from the 10 that we start with, so it's 8, and then we record 20% times 8, or 1.6, for this extra accelerated amount. Let's go into Excel and show you what this looks like. So let's say we have 20% annual amortization here. For the loss on the unamortized original issue discount upon repayment, we are taking the OID beginning balance minus the amortization this year, so the 10 minus the 2, that's the sum of G21 to G22 here, and then we're multiplying by the 20 that we repay divided by the starting balance of 100. So we repay 20% of the principal this year, and as a result, we get to that 1.6 number that I just showed you in PowerPoint, and that is how this works. Of course, we don't just stop there. There's something else as well, which is that the amortization of the OID itself, that normal straight-lined amount that we had before, also changes in the scenario. So it's not just a simple straight-line number anymore. The calculation is that it's equal to the minimum between the OID beginning balance in this year and the beginning balance in this year divided by the remaining years in the OID amortization period. So if we have an OID of 10 and a 5-year period, this will initially be 10 divided by 5, or 2, but it will fall to less than 1 by the end because of the way the math works. Let's go into Excel and take a look at this again. If we go under the amortization of OID here, it's the same exact formula using the minimum function. So initially, it's just going to be the 10 divided by the 5 here, which gives us 2 for the amortization of OID. But then by the end, or at least by year 4, let's say, we go down to 0.8. Because by the time we get here, our OID beginning balance is 1.6. 1.6 divided by 2 gives us 0.8 for the amortization of OID. And then, of course, by the end, we get to an even lower number here, 0.4, and then the OID goes away completely by the end. So if you think about the net effect here, instead of amortizing just 2 of the OID per year, we amortize 4, and then 3, and then 2, and then 1, and then less than 1. And you can see that pretty clearly if we just look at the numbers here. So let's just add up the amortization of OID and then the accelerated amortization component. And you can see it goes from 3.6 to 2.8, to 2.0, to 1.2, to 0.4 by the end.
Okay, we're back. Just want to give you a little information on that OID thing here. And
okay, my name is Gene Keating. You want to test? Is this thing working? Is it working? Okay. I'm going to be your narrator today. I've been doing this stuff for 35 years. I started teaching this stuff way back, and before we start, I'm going to pray. I always pray before we start. If you knew what was coming down the pike, you'd be praying every day. But I'm not going to go. If you want a separate seminar on that, I'll tell you what's going to happen. This planet is in grave danger right now. Okay, I'm going to say a prayer. Father, we know that the word of Yahweh is alive and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of the soul and the spirit and the joints and the marrow, and is the discerner between the thoughts and intents of the heart. All scripture is God-breathed, given for reproof, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be thoroughly furnished unto all good works, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, but writing rightly dividing the word of truth. We pray, Father, that as we study the word of truth, that you open our minds and give us wisdom and understanding to apply the things that we are taught today. We ask this in the sacred name of Yahshua HaMashiach Shaddahi. Amen. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of background. I've been to law school. I went to the same law school my brother went to. My brother's a judge in California. I have 4 brothers. They're all lawyers. My twin brother is a lawyer in judge in California. He's on the Superior Court bench. He graduated from USC, 4 years at USC, 8 years at Hastings Law School. I majored in commercial law. He majored in corporate real estate. He's a multimillionaire. Our brother's very good at. He's a senior partner at one of the biggest corporate law firms in the United States in Chicago, Illinois. He's retired now, and he gets a pension. He teaches. He does arbitration now. He's making a lot of money. And what I'm going to go in today is we're going to talk about commercial law and how it applies to you and what they're doing with you as a person. And I've been teaching this stuff for 35 years. I started teaching this stuff back in 1970. Nobody would listen, so I quit teaching it. Now people are starting to listen. I've known this for 35 years, what's going on, that everything is commercial. And the reason everything is commercial, there's no money. And what I mean by money is asset. And this is where commercial law comes in. There's two forms of money in commercial law. There's asset money and debt money. The asset money is on the private side. The debt money is on the public side. You have two different venues. You have a private and a public. And if you stay on the private side, you'll never have any problems. When you get over into the public side, this is where you get into the fiction, what they call legal fiction. And when your mother, your parents signed the birth certificate, they created a fictitious entity called a straw man. In commercial law, it's called a homo straws, which is a legal fiction or a straw man. And what they did is they took this and they registered it with the Department of Commerce. They registered it with the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and then they registered it with the Department of Commerce. Then they registered it with the DTC. I don't know if any of you have. Does anybody in here know what the DTC is? Okay, there's two. Let me explain something to you. There's two different companies. This is the parent company here. Like this, it's called Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, DTCC. This is controlled by the Jesuits out of Rome, Italy. Called the guy that owns the Federal Reserve System is called, his name is Hans van Klovenbach. He's called the Black Pope. They own the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, the Pentagon, and the United Nations, which is a military-industrial complex. They run our government. I'm not saying our government. I don't want anything to do with these people, because they're all going to be extricated here very shortly, and I don't want anything to do with them. What I'm going to show you today is how they're controlling everybody. That's why I'm going into this stuff. And this is proprietary information. It's not being taught by anybody in the Patriot community, because they don't know it. I've done the research. I had a federal judge read my treatise. He says I was 100% correct. Dan Benham read my treatise. I don't know if you guys know. Anybody here know who Dan Benham is? Dan read my treatise. And he says I'm 100% correct. So I'm not looking for patronization, for people to patronize me. I know what's going on. I've done the research and I've documented everything I teach. This is what I'm teaching you is what's going on. And you're not going to effectuate change in this country unless you know what the hell's going on. You got all these patriots going around filing papers, filing UCC-1s, UCC-3s, and they don't even know what they're doing. And you got people selling, one, like the Aware Group are selling UCC-1s and they're charging $3,000 or $4,000. You got Howard Griswold selling UCC-1s to people. I was the one that got Howard into all this commercial law. You shouldn't be filing anything until you understand what you're doing. People don't understand what they're doing. They don't even know what a UCC-1 is. You can't file a UCC-1 unless you have a contract. Where's the contract? A UCC-1 is a financing statement. The reason you file a financing statement is because you got a contract under Article 2. You have to have a contract. It's the contract that makes you the secured party, not the UCC-1. You don't even need a UCC-1. How do you think they're getting you jurisdiction over you in the courtroom? Through contract. People go in there and file a UCC-1, then they go into the courtroom and contract all their rights away. Debtor-creditor. Let me ask you a question. How can you have a debtor and a creditor when there's no money? If there's no money, how can you have a creditor? What I'm revealing to you here today is what's going on in the courtroom. The court system is tied into this company right here, Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, the DTCC. And they own these two companies right here. There's two of these companies right here. This is the Depository Trust Corporation. And there's the Depository Trust Company, two separate entities under this, the Depository Trust Clearing Corporation. This is the NSCC. This is the MSCC, and this is the GSCC. This means National Securities Clearing Corporation. This is the Mutual Securities Clearing Corporation. This is the Government Securities Clearing Corporation. These are all subdivisions of DTCC. Everybody got their... written down? I've got a treatise. You're not going to get all this stuff today, I'll tell you right now. I've been teaching this stuff. I've got all this stuff memorized. I've been studying this stuff for so long, I've got to record it all up here. I have a 150-page treatise. I've got a CD with all this stuff on it, all the laws they're using, everything. It's got a disclosure statement on the DTC. It's a 55-page document. I'll show you how to order that if you want to order it. You should sit down and study this stuff. You have to understand what is going on in the courtroom before you ever go in there. Cases are won and lost before you ever get into the courtroom. My brother doesn't know. Everybody assumes because nobody knows this stuff. Even the judges don't know this stuff. You got any questions about this? MS is Mutual Securities Clearing Corporation. These are company different divisions of the DTC. DTCC. This is the parent company. These are all trust companies. And they're all banks. This company right here is a securities depository and settlement company. They own everything. I'm going to, if you've got this, everybody got this written down? This is not my opinion. I've called these people up and talked. We got a taped conversation between one of the employees that works down there. You got to listen to this conversation. He's spilling the whole beans. This company right here, DTC, it's nominee. Nominee means name. It's called Seed and Company. C-E-D-E, and it's spelled in all capital letters like that. That's the nominee. This word, you ever heard when they ceded the state of Maryland to the District of Columbia? It became part of the District of Columbia, which is where your government is, which is set up by the whole White House is sitting on tax plot map, and all the lots are divided up like this. I'll show you. Everybody got that? All these lots are like, they're numbered like this. They go down here like this. I'm not making this up. I got the actual map. This came out of the Congressional Record in Washington, D.C. This is the where the Capitol Dome is located, right here. If you read Revelation 16:18, it says, the great city shall be split in two parts. The great whore of Babylon is New York City.
Okay, let's get on back down here now. Honor at all costs. Your mission, should you decide to accept it, is to honor statement as you your credit exemption. The state is raising you up as a creditor every time it gives you a presentment. It is your choice. You can honor the state by accepting voluntarily for it to get enough of your credit to equal the value of its payment, dollar for dollar. Or you can voluntarily dishonor and it prove its claim, or defending this plan, pretending the state has no right to make its claim. Why? That is a hard choice. Voluntarily authorize state's use of your exemption, or you can voluntarily dishonor the state, at which time it will use your dishonor to take the property from the adult man or to take your body or collect rent while you are sitting in jail. Gee, what should I do? What should I do? The best way and the hard way. The choice is always yours. The state is only following your lead. It has to use your exemption and maybe take some of your possessions besides. If you accept and authorize the state to use your exemption, it is required to accept it. What do you have to lose? Is your exemption... What difference does it make if the state gets to use your exemption? The difference is the grocery store and Walmart responds to fire calls. The garbage trucks pick garbage and the streets are repaired. when you understand how win-win situation. If you do not know how to stay in order, it might be a win-lose situation, which you lose it. The state will get what it wants either way. Okay? There is no money. Okay, and I keep saying this here, and we're going to get to it in a minute, and but we're going to go down here. Get down here some more. What else we got up here? Let me see what we got right here. Okay, here we go. Hold on.
Hey, everybody. This is Dave from Verified News, and this is part two of page one of Sites and References and Definitions from Gene Keating's treatise. And this is paragraph 6 and 7, the last half of paragraph 6 and paragraph 7, all the sites and references and definitions that are in those paragraphs. I'd like to thank whoever made the nice donation. The next video is paid for through a donation. This series is obviously, as it said, donation-driven. I don't do the next video until I receive a minimum of $5 donation. That's just on this series. I'll still be making all my other videos, and anything I extrapolate from these slides, once I've had time to absorb them a little bit, I'll put up my own work, you know, and that'll be free. So the donations are only for the Gene Keating series because it's 98 pages, and I've decided to make a project of it and do the whole thing. And so far, it's already opened my eyes a little bit, you know, and given me an insight into some things that I made my own little work videos on. And hopefully this series of slides will generate a few other videos of my own, that's work of my own, based on what I'm learning here. You know, we have to stand on the shoulders of giants, you know, and they stood on the shoulders of the giants that came before them. And we have to become the giants so people can stand on our shoulders until finally we see over the top of the wall, you know, and what's on the other side. So, a lot of brain burn in this one. They're talking about presentments, and he's talking about delay in presentment, waivers of presentment. Presentment is excused, which is interesting. Now, in this case, presentment with their In this case, what they're talking about in presentment is presentment of a check or a bill of exchange, some sort of instrument that when you present it, it's supposed to be paid by who you present it to. So, now here, which is interesting, I got into the maker, have a Gene's example there, but what I noticed is, look it up here, acceptance. An acceptance of a bill of exchange written on the paper before the bill is made and delivered by the acceptor. That's interesting. So is the acceptor the maker? Still pondering that. That's my discernment down there. That's the question. Hey, everybody. This is Dave from Verified News, FreedomWatch.us channel. And today, we're working on a Gene Keating treatise again. Page 2, paragraphs, I can't remember which paragraphs, but I'll put it in the title. And these will be all the sites and definitions from those first few paragraphs. And there may be a little bit of overlap from previous definitions. I can't remember if I already defined some terms, and B, it wouldn't hurt to review them again. So this is for page 2. This is a donation-generated video. The next video will be contingent upon receipt of a $5 donation in this series. My own work and the rest of my normal stuff, of course, I just put up as I feel like putting it up. So anyway, each slide runs about 30 seconds, and you can pause the slide if you need more time. Go ahead to the next 30-second marker to get to the next slide. Hey, everybody, this is Dave from Verified News, FreedomWatch.us channel. And today I am going to be talking about, well, it's hard to describe what I'm going to be talking about, but it's about a question that originally started because of the way the definition of holder was written here in Black's Law Dictionary, and it's got a pretty impressive list of references on that definition. So without having looked into all of those definitions, I am assuming that what they're saying about holder here, in other words, I haven't read all the sites and all that, but they're citing all these sites, and it's obviously a reputable source citing the sites. In other words, you know, it's, I believe that's from Black's Law. Oh, I didn't put it in, did I? Oh, I didn't put in where I got that, but I'm pretty sure it's from Black's. But anyway, there's quite a few case sites. So let's look at what it says here. The holder of a bill exchange, promissory note, note or check is the person who has legally acquired the possession of the same. Okay, so you've got a bill of exchange, promissory note, or check. Now, as we know, a bill of exchange could be a claim that you owe money, as I believe a draft here, a common form of bill of exchange, is being drawn by one person on another. An order for payment of money drawn by one person on another. It is said to be, whatever it is, and to include all such orders. Okay, so is it a bill? So it's a bill, okay. It can be, it's either a bill, a check. Here's the question. Holder. Holder of a bill of exchange, promissory note, or check. So obviously these are three different things. Bills of exchange, promissory notes, or checks. Or maybe they're not. I didn't even want to get into that question, but okay. Note of a bill of exchange. So the holder is the person who is in possession of the instrument from a person capable of transferring it by endorsement or delivery. So you can transfer it by endorsement or delivery. Now when you transfer it by endorsement, you credit it to someone else. So if you're the holder of someone who's capable of transmitting it by endorsement, then whatever the value of that instrument has been credited to whoever transferred it by endorsement or delivery, which means delivery without endorsement or service of claim, and who is entitled to receive a payment of the instrument from the party or parties liable to meet it. Now, here's the question. Now, I never would have wrote this way. And the reason is, this last part, and who is entitled to receive payment of the instrument from the party or parties liable to meet it. Which party? Is the holder or the transferor, the person who transferred it? In other words, who is entitled to receive a payment of the instrument from the party or parties liable to meet it? Now, when I read that, it automatically brings the question, is the holder of the party who's entitled to receive payment, or is the transferor? If it's endorsed, then the holder is entitled to receive payment. In other words, if I endorse a check and give it to a bank and transfer it by the bank by delivery, or and just endorse it, then they're the ones that are entitled to receive payment, not me. In other words, everybody thinks like the holder Is the holder the one who, you see, is the holder the one who owes or the one who's been paid? That's the question I have. Just by the way they structured that, it leaves that question open. And who is entitled to receive payment of the instrument from the party or parties liable to meet it? I mean, I know this stuff is insane, but you got to remember, pluses are negatives, positives are minuses, everything's backwards. So who's the holder? Okay, so I got to figure out who the holder is now. And remember, this slide we're looking at now is from my Gene Keating analysis series, but it raised this question, and I don't consider this video part of the Gene Keating analysis, by the way. This is my own research and my own question, my own seeking of an answer of the backward state, okay? And I know it's there because it's mathematically has to be there. Everything has to be backwards. So when you get a bill, is it a check? Is it something that is payable to you? Because when you become the holder of that bill? That's the big question. All right, let's go to slide two now. And I'm going to pause the video for a second and expand slide two so I can read off of it. Be right back. All right, let's look what we have here. I decided to look more into holder to see if we can get a more definitive definition of that, short of hiring a linguistics professor in English to tell us what that meant. Okay, holder. An individual has lawfully received possession of a commercial paper, such as a check, commercial paper, any commercial paper, I guess, we'll have to look that up, and who is entitled to payment on such instrument. Holder is distinguishable from a holder in due course, since in addition to possession of the instrument, the latter takes it for value in good faith and in the absence of any notice that there is any claim against it or that it is overdue or has been dishonored, which means that payment has been refused. Okay, so what's a holder in due course? An individual who takes a commercial paper for value in good faith with the belief that it is valid with no knowledge of any defects. So they're just talking about the paper here. The Uniform Commercial Code defines a holder in due course as one who takes an instrument for value in good faith absent any notice that it is overdue, has been dishonored, or is subject to any defense against it or a claim laid to it by any other person. West Encyclopedia. Well, still not answering my question, but stuff that I need to know. Value, the utility of an object, just because these words are appearing in these other sites here. Value, the utility of an object in satisfying directly or indirectly the needs or desires of human beings, called by economists, value in use or its worth, blah, blah, blah. Estimated appraised worth of any object or property, calculated in money. The term is often used in abbreviation for valuable consideration, especially in the phrases purchaser for value, valuable consideration. Okay, well, that's pretty simple. Is the pledge of your life's labor and stuff valuable? I'd say so. Okay, next slide. All right, in the last slide, value involved the word utility, so we need to look that up. Utility. In economics, the level of satisfaction the person derives from a good or service, utility is inherently subjective and thus difficult to measure. But it is important in determining how much supply of a product the market can handle without diminishing demand. Historically, it has been thought that one can quantify the utility of each unit, but some it's not answering the question directly. Farlex Financial Dictionary. Utility. From my Webster's, I did this by hand. One, the quality or property of being useful. Usefulness. The greatest happiness to the greatest number. Three, something useful. Four through six is just all about utility companies. Seven, in economics, the power to satisfy the needs and wants of humanity. Synonyms, usefulness, advantage, benefit, convenience, service, use. Of course, now there's that word use, usufruct. a civil law term. Now, this is going to get into where I think I figured something out. A civil law term referring to the right of one individual to use and enjoy the property of another, provided its substance is neither impaired or altered. Okay, usufructory. One who has the right and enjoyment of a usufruct. Some guy with his usual clarity said, the duties of usufructory, which are, one, to make an inventory of things subject to usufruct in the presence of those having an interest in them, two, to give security for their restitution when the usufruct shall be at an end. Not sure what that means. I'm asking for comments and input here. Three, to take good care of the things subject to the usufruct. Four, to pay all taxes and claims which arise while the thing in his possession as a ground rent. Five, to keep the thing in repair at his own expense. That's from
Okay. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we're down to a few more minutes here. And before I get back here to roof, three, there is no money. I'm going to hold off on that. And we're going to come back and we're going to do some more of this. We won't do we'll be going to something different, but we are going to be coming back with this stuff. I know where I left off at. There is no money. And I'm not going to try to read that into the broadcast, but I am going to finish out for these last 10 minutes. And so y'all bear with me. Keep in mind, next week we will be back with some more stuff involving this law. And before the month out, we'll have illustrious guest Dr. Walter Williams back with us again, so that we can deal with what he's got going on. The way to get a hold to the documents and stuff that you would need to deal with this stuff, you go to talkingdeadelimination.org, and you can contact me. You get my free report over there, and keep your eyes and ears open for other subsequent videos that'll be coming back. We'll be written this one that we're doing tonight into a video, and we'll be on YouTube so that you can go over there and you can get a hold of that. Okay? A little break in. Okay, everybody. We come to the close of the broadcast. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, y'all have a good evening. We will be back next weekend with some more information. Keep in mind, we'll be converting into a video. Go up on YouTube, and in order to subscribe, right there on the face of the video itself in the bottom right-hand corner, subscribe, so you'll be able to go back and listen to this stuff and other subsequent broadcasts done in previous times. Okay, next week we'll be back on the air. But I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, y'all have a good evening.